Iran's president says his administration has been successful in controlling soaring inflation, vowing to spare no effort to improve people's livelihoods. Iran condemns a abhorrent beating of female Palestinian inmates in an Israeli jail, slamming the U.S. and EU for remaining silent. And around 1,000 British Border Force officers will go on strike next month to join a wave of industrial action sweeping the country. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. The Iranian president says his administration has been successful in reining in soaring inflation, promising more work to improve people's living conditions. Ebrahim Raisi said the inflation rate has seen a 20% decline under his watch and currently stands at 40%. The president said recent riots in the country disrupted local markets and pushed up the foreign currency exchange rates. Raisi said his administration seeks to stabilize the market and make sure that people's livelihoods are not affected by fluctuations in the forex markets. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran's ready to advance security and stability in Africa. Hossein Amri Abdollahian was meeting with Mauritania's President Mohamed Oumarzouk in Nouakchott. The Iranian foreign minister said his country stands at the forefront of fighting terrorism. He praised Mauritania's counterterrorism efforts in Western Sahara. Amri Abdollahian said that Tehran supports peace and stability in the region. The Mauritanian president underscored Iran's role in fighting terror and called for the expansion of relations. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman condemned as utterly abhorrent the beating of Palestinian women held in Israeli prisons. Nasser Kanani questioned the way that U.S. and European countries respond to human rights abuses committed by the Israeli regime. Meantime, a Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, said Israeli violations against Palestinian prisoners will not go unpunished. Hamas called on young Palestinians to keep up the resistance against the Israeli regime. On Tuesday, the Israeli prison service placed in solitary confinement Palestinian women imprisoned at the Damon facility. Prison authorities also reportedly assaulted women's representative at the detention center. The Palestinian prisoners languishing in an Israeli jail have resumed a hunger strike for a second straight day now. 120 detainees have been refusing food in protest at inhumane situation of the prison situated in the Negev Desert. Human rights groups have repeatedly expressed concern over the Palestinian treatment there. For years, locked up Palestinians have had no choice but to go on a hunger strike to draw awareness to the violations of their basic rights in Israeli detention. Most Palestinian inmates are held in Israeli prisons with no charge or trial. And for more on the story, we were earlier joined by Ramallah correspondent Mona Candio.
120 Palestinian prisoners are continuing their hunger strike against the Israeli practices, the illegal, of course, practices against Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, and mainly for against the Israeli ongoing raids to the cells at any time, transferring Palestinian prisoners from a cell to another and even from jail to another, imposing solitary confinement against Palestinian prisoners. In addition to this, we have to mention that Palestinian prisoners from both the Hamas and Jihad movement had even refused to leave their cells today in a number of Israeli jails like Majiddo, Aofer, and Ad-Damun to protest the illegal Israeli practices against them. And also hundreds of Palestinian prisoners had refused to get their meals today. It's not a hunger strike, but they returned back their meals. It's, of course, a protest. It's a move seen by the Israelis as a challenge by the Palestinian prisoners.
A prominent advocacy group has accused the British government of unlawfully resuming arms sales to Saudi Arabia for possible use in the war on Yemen. The UK-based campaign against arms trade told London High Court government gives arms to the kingdom despite evidence of repeated violations of international humanitarian law. The CAAT also accused the government of caring more about profits than war crimes and the deaths of civilians. The government has acknowledged there had been breaches of humanitarian law by the Riyadh regime, but said that they're isolated cases. UK authorities resumed arms sales to the kingdom in 2020. A court ruling had decided in 2019 sales were unlawful. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on Yemen back in March of 2015. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed since. UK Prime Minister has yet to find a replacement for chairman of his ruling Conservative Party. Nadeem Zahawi was fired over the weekend following weeks of revelations about his tax affairs. Saeed Puriza has your details.
Nadeem Zahawi, the Conservative Party chairman, fallen from grace for not paying his taxes. He received accolades as vaccine minister during the pandemic and even ran for prime minister last year. His downfall began after it emerged he settled nearly a $6 million dispute with the UK's tax collector, HMRC, during his time as chancellor last summer. An inquiry ordered by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak found Zahawi had breached the ministerial code.
Zahawi is out, but now the focus has shifted to the Prime Minister himself. This week, he'll be facing tough questions in the building behind me about how much he knew about Mr. Zahawi's tax affairs and when.
Zahawi's sacking has also acted as a reminder about Rishi Sunak's reinstatement of Suella Braverman as Home Secretary last year, after she resigned for breaching the ministerial code by sending a sensitive official document from her personal email account.
Sunak has said he wanted to have a government of integrity, essentially, and it sends the wrong signals in that sense too. We therefore see a government which is drifting and failing to achieve some of its own specific targets, and that's got to be a worry for the Prime Minister and indeed for their election chances.
Speaking of Boris Johnson, he's been named by his supporters as a potential candidate to replace Nadeem Zahawi.
He's seen as a vote magnet, but he's also a trouble magnet. Most recently, we've seen these questions being asked about the chair of the BBC helping him out with a loan. Nothing has been said about law-breaking, but with all of the other problems the Conservatives have, do they really want to risk Boris Johnson in a position where he could bring more intrigue, let's say?
That, in addition to a parliamentary inquiry into whether Boris Johnson misled the House of Commons over Partygate, lockdown rule-breaking drinking sessions during the pandemic, and an investigation into numerous complaints of bullying by Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab. Nadeem Zahawi will be remembered as the minister who played fast and loose with the rules and became the first one to be dismissed by the prime minister. But no one's sure if he will be the last. Saeed Puriza, London.
Around 1,000 UK border force officers at English Channel ports are set to walk off the job this month, joining a wave of industrial action over pay. Public and Commercial Services Union said staff at Dover and French ports of Dunkirk and Calais will strike for higher pay between February 17th and the 20th. The PCS said the blame for these strikes lies firmly at the feet of ministers who are refusing to put any money on the table. And this is hundreds of thousands of British public sector workers, from teachers and civil servants to train drivers and university lecturers, will strike Wednesday in the largest coordinated action in a generation. They're demanding better pay in line with double-digit inflation that has squeezed household budgets. Meanwhile, French police have clashed with protesters in the capital, Paris, and the cities of Rennes as workers stage a second day of nationwide rallies and strikes against the government's pension reform plan. Police try to disperse the crowds using tear gas and water cannons. Hundreds of thousands took to the streets in several cities protesting the reform plan. According to unions, over 2 million workers attended the rallies. Authorities had mobilized over 11,000 police, 4,000 to Paris alone. Strikes have disrupted public transport, schools, and many other sectors. Opinion polls show a substantial majority of French citizens are opposed to the reform, but President Emmanuel Macron intends to go ahead with the plan, arguing that it's vital to ensure the viability of the pension system. Protesters say that they will keep hitting the streets until authorities back down.
I'm not against a reform, but not this one, because it is unequal vis-à-vis workers. We always hit the same ones when there are other solutions that the government did not wish to consider.
We have reached a stage where I wonder if they realize. It's already been 4 years since the yellow vests have been in the street. It's been 4 years since we say that we already have the slab, and here the government continues to encroach on the wallets of the French. I see that there are people, so it's nice, but they really have to realize that we are fed up, really fed up. We won't stop anyway.
Ladies and gentlemen of the government, you are wearing people down. You are using everything we had in our reserves, and now there is no more reserve. There is nothing left, and when the people have nothing left, that's where the anger is the strongest. You are taking away our bread.
This is the second strike in France over the issue in less than 2 weeks. The government said a bill intends to overhaul the pension system and raise the retirement age to 64 from 62, where it's at right now. Government has signaled there could be a wiggle room, though, on some of these measures, but not on the age limit. U.S. officials say Washington is preparing over $2 billion worth of military assistance to Ukraine amid its war with Russia. New package will include longer-range rockets. Officials say it is expected to include support equipment for Patriot air defense systems, precision-guided munitions, and Javelin anti-tank weapons. This is the first time U.S. is providing long-range rockets to Ukraine. A large portion of funding for the new package will come from Washington's Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. It allows President Joe Biden's administration to get weapons from the U.S. arms industry rather than existing weapon stocks. Russia has always said that Western military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war. European Parliament is desperate to display a unanimous position on arming Ukraine with more lethal weapons. However, some MEPs have called military support to Ukraine as lunacy, which could prolong war with Russia, provoke strong response from Moscow. Jerome Hughes reports out of Brussels.
The decision to send German and American tanks to Ukraine is continuing to generate controversy. Many believe the move will prolong the war, and there's concern as to how Russia might respond. However, at a parliamentary hearing on Tuesday, EU legislators were told the West should go even further.
Russia is attacking Ukraine from Russian territory, so obviously we should provide the Ukrainians with long-range missiles, obviously.
There are a lot of EU lawmakers who agree.
Any delay to supply Ukraine with needed weaponry and ammunition is more lives lost on the battlefield.
Some argue constantly supplying lethal weapons to Ukraine is foolish.
We're prepared to risk nuclear war in order to continue this US-NATO proxy war. It is total madness. And this European Union and the European Parliament have lost the plot. They've lost the run of themselves.
European Union taxpayers have provided 50 billion euro to Kiev since last March.
What happens to all the money we send to Ukraine? Is it just disappearing into individuals' pockets? Even President Zelensky has had to admit there's a big problem with widespread corruption.
A number of legislators would like to see less division within the EU.
Austria and Hungary just decided we will not deliver weapons. Okay, it's their decision. But that shows already some hesitation or some breakup of unity.
Spanish MEP Javier Nart told his colleagues it's, quote, ridiculous to suggest Ukraine can win the war against Russia. For now, the US and Germany have ruled out providing fighter jets to Ukraine. Others, including France, have not. According to many analysts, the risk that the conflict could escalate further and spiral completely out of control has never been greater. Jerome Hughes at the European Parliament, Brussels.
Now, a new BBC documentary, now banned in India, has renewed tensions between religious communities throughout the Indian world, with clashes between Hindu sympathizers of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and other opposition groups critical of his allegedly divisive leadership. Robert Carter reports.
Tensions between Muslims and Hindus in Britain have risen following the recent release of a new BBC documentary, which explores the rise in Hindu extremist politics in India and concerns that India's Prime Minister may be facilitating the increased violence against India's religious minorities. Over the weekend, British Hindu protesters condemned the BBC with a series of demonstrations outside their UK offices. In one case, a British Muslim of Kashmiri descent confronted a group of Modi supporters in Birmingham.
Modi is a terrorist! Modi, that's it! Keep it moving, guys! I love BJP!
Some clashes turned violent, as was seen in Australia, this time between Modi supporters and local Sikhs. The two-part documentary, India, the Modi Question, has not been broadcast in India by the BBC. Despite this, India's federal government banned the film, citing emergency powers under India's controversial information technology laws. An attempt by Indian students to air the program on Friday in New Delhi led to scuffles and arrests.
Where is our freedom to express? Here we students are not supposed to watch a documentary. If it is hidden, if it is banned, then sure there might be something important in it.
Here in Britain, local activists have expressed concern over the possible spread of the same Hindu supremacist ideology to UK shores.
It's a double standard. When they cry for help, they're seen as the victim. But when we cry for help, we're seen as the aggressors. And the simple fact of the matter is that the extremist Hindu community here in Birmingham, it has been growing in UK, has been growing for some years.
In 2022, two English Midland cities witnessed street clashes between Hindus and Muslims, with locals complaining that the troubles in India had essentially spread via the Indian diaspora to British shores. This new documentary has clearly opened old wounds, which could be traced back to 2002, during the notorious Gujarat pogroms, which left approximately 1,000 Muslims killed. Robert Carter, London.
That's a wrap for your latest. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Imam Khomeini, God's righteous servant. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, these days mark the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. We have prepared a special series on this occasion. The first episode will be a brief look at Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, as the great leader of this revolution. Stay tuned, please. Imam Khomeini had been sent to exile for more than 14 years due to his struggles against the British-installed and American-supported Pahlavi regime. The Imam was sent clandestinely to Turkey in 1964. After some 10 months, he was transferred to the holy city of Najaf in Iraq. The Imam stayed in Najaf for more than 13 years, till the increase of pressures by the Shah of Iran, which forced him to change his residence from Iraq to the village of Nofel-le-Chateau near Paris. On February 1, 1979, Imam Khomeini's airplane took off toward Tehran. At time of entering Iran's air, a journalist asked the Imam how he felt. Imam Khomeini answered indifferently, "Nothing." Unlike the leaders of uprisings and revolutions who rejoice for triumph over their enemies, the Imam said nothing, as he had acted according to his duty and for God's sake. So he would not get sad if he failed, and he didn't become happy when he triumphed. On February 1, 1979, the greatest and most glorious welcome in history was accorded to Imam Khomeini. The axis of victory of the Islamic Revolution was surely the unmatched leader who was ably and powerfully guided the nation better than any politician in the world. While religion had been quite isolated and pushed to the margin, Imam Khomeini followed the method of the Prophet of Islam and his infallible successors to liberate a nation from the yoke of colonialists and bullies of the world. He awakened the nation and granted self-esteem, self-confidence, and identity to them and other Muslim nations. The Imam presented a new system of governance on the basis of Islam within the structure of people's vote. Here, it should be noted that people's vote played a true role in Imam's view, opposite to the flawed and backward Western democracy, which only pretends to act on the basis of people's vote, while in practice, it is at the service of the owners of power. Imam Khomeini's successor, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, describes the Imam as follows. One of the titles and epithets which have been used less about our great Imam is this phrase. We always describe the Imam with numerous epithets, but this epithet, which we have described him rarely with it, is a comprehensive epithet. He is faithful, submissive servant, and revolutionary. Faithful means that he has faith in God. He has faith in the goal. He has faith in the path that takes him to this goal. And he has faith in people. It has been mentioned in the Quran about the noble prophets too. He had faith in God, faith in the goal, faith in the path, and faith in people. He is a servant, a submissive servant. It means that he considers himself a servant before the Lord. This is a very important epithet. Look, God, the Exalted, has praised the noble prophet with numerous epithets in the Quran, each of which mentions an ample chapter of the prophet's characteristics. But the epithet which we Muslims have been ordered to repeat every day in our daily ritual prayers on the prophet is this: I bear witness that indeed Muhammad is his servant, an apostle. This indicates the importance of servitude. Being a servant is so prominent that God the Exalted teaches Muslims this epithet to repeat it several times in their prayers every day. The Imam had such an epithet, the epithet of servitude. He was a man of humbleness. He was a man of pleading humbly. And he was a man of praying, a submissive servant. And as for the third epithet, that is revolutionary, the Imam was the Imam of the Revolution. Imam Khomeini enjoyed a comprehensive godly personality. Therefore, upon his splendid return to the country, he opened new vistas of Islam before the contemporary man and presented Islam as a progressive religion which is capable of meeting all the demands of man in the modern world. The Iranian people had truly found their beliefs and ideals in his words and deeds. Therefore, they unanimously gathered around him. Imam Khomeini raised pure Muhammadan Islam as the new view on Islam, which includes every political, economic, cultural, and social aspect in human life. His take of Islam is a religion which fights the world oppressors and bullies in support for the oppressed and downtrodden in every country. The great leader of the Islamic Revolution believed that the way to the hereafter goes through this world. For him, both individual and social affairs mattered in order to help the individual and society grow. The Imam would never forget midnight prayer even when he was sick. On the night of flying to Tehran from Paris, while everyone was asleep, Imam Khomeini was performing midnight prayer on the upper floor of the airplane. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "What enabled the Imam to guide, administer, and lead this nation and this great revolution was his relation with God, his connection with God, his attention to God. He was truly God's servant, righteous servant. I cannot find a better epithet than this for Imam. He was a righteous servant." We'll be right back.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is Zainab, and today we're going to discuss something very important with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi is a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. Dear listeners, in this program, we try to answer your questions and issues that you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Well, Professor Naqavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Professor, you know, the children expect a lot, and they have their own world views. They have, all the children are kind of somewhere, one or the other way, little ungrateful, and they need more and more freedom. What do you say about that?
Yes, I thank you very much. I would like to begin this talk of mine in the name of Allah. Actually, one of the issues that our children, teenagers especially, are looking for is freedom. Everyone is talking about freedom. And most of the times, people are referring to this holy verse in the Quran, which says, La ikraha fid din. And they make this reason for their freedom, and they want to say that Islam or religion does not want to impose itself, so we should be free to do as we wish. Of course, human beings have been given freedom; they are born free. There is no doubt about that. Even if we remember the statement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, when he was talking to his murderers at the very end, he said that even if you don't if you do not accept deen, then you should be free. فَكُونُوا أَحْرَارًا فِي دُنْيَاكُمْ. You should be free, freedom-loving people.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? Do we have the freedom to make the wrong choices? No, and does anyone expect us or allow us to say, look, I am free to make the wrong choice? I'm free to make to kill someone? No, that's not the case.
Now, what does that freedom exactly mean? I'll ask you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. And Professor Naqavi is helping us understand the freedom the children want and the freedom that should be given. Yes, Professor.
So, freedom to make the right choices is there. The right choices which preserve and which guarantee another important aspect and value, that is human dignity. Karamna bani Adam. Allah Almighty says in the Quran that we have given human beings dignity, and we have given them a position in the whole design of creation a special position, which they occupy because they have been created by him by breathing into them from his very soul. So human beings have dignity, and this dignity has to be preserved. And the more human beings are God-fearing, the more people are accepting God's tawheed, and they fear him, and they act according to that fear, their dignity is preserved. So do we have the right to do something which is opposite to that? Not at all. Yes, we have to act freely, but we have to make the correct choices. We have to take the right path, and that which preserves and guarantees that human dignity. Proximity to Allah Almighty is preserving that human dignity. Proximity to Allah Almighty can only be achieved if we make the right choices. Yes, Allah Almighty wants us to be close to him of our own free will. That is true proximity. Freedom of choice gives us and propels us towards Allah Almighty. It's not like we're not robots. We're not even like angels in the sense that they cannot do anything wrong. They cannot sin at all.
Yeah.
No. Allah Almighty has given us the intellect, just like the angels, and he has given us instincts just like the animals.
Yeah.
Therefore, we have to balance. And we have to, if we act according to the commands of our intellect and make a free choice to move towards Allah, we will not only excel, we will surpass the angels.
Yeah.
So that is the true freedom which Islam gives us. Therefore, it says, after La ikraha fi d-din, قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيِّ.
Yes.
The right path from the wrong path has been made clear for all.
Yeah.
If you use your minds, you will understand the right path.
Exactly. You remind me of one of the hadiths Qudsi in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, there's a choice you have, there's my choice. If you submit your choice and will to me, and I will also give you what is your choice and will. If you do not do that, I will make you tired chasing your choice, and ultimately that will happen what is my choice. So in either way, we have to submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because that's what will take us towards proximity. And as Allah says in the very beginning, that if you submit, I'll also provide you what is your choice. So submitting is something that is really important. We'll discuss more on the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, a righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. And we are discussing about the freedom that children chant and want and demand. And is their demand okay? Or how much this demand can be fulfilled? Because especially teens, Professor, teens are the ones who ask for this freedom. So you were saying about freedom.
So they, as I said, freedom is making freedom for making the right choices. Now, how do we make the right choice? The Allah Almighty, again, as I said, has given us the intellect. So using the intellect properly is important. We must teach our children to be be intelligent, to be able to discover the truth. They should be children, especially teenagers. They are curious. They have questions. They have problems that have to be solved. So we need to be well versed ourselves as parents to give them the proper answers. We should be studying ourselves. We should be making good use of our time by indulging in activities which increases our own knowledge.
So it's not just getting married and having kids. It's all about the process of knowledge. You have to go on keeping on, like you marry. The first thing you have to do after the marriage or like before the marriage is to educate yourself.
Even before that, I mean, if we want to get married, we should know why we're getting married. It's not just for simple physical pleasures that we, of course, we have those, but
that's not everything.
That's not everything. So that is the positive aspect of it, but we need to prepare ourselves and educate ourselves. If we have the proper worldview and we have acquired that worldview, then we can convey it and we can inculcate it into our children. So especially the teenagers, if we're not able to answer their questions, they will be led to the wrong answers by people who influence them. If they are
maybe
not...
Maybe they actually confront someone who has less knowledge.
Exactly. They encounter so many people, they become, for example, they become to respect those people who do not have the proper knowledge or who
have a wrong worldview.
Exactly, and they have a lot, and they feel impressed by them and they follow that. But if you as a parent have the correct knowledge and you're able to communicate properly with your child, then you can tell him the proper things and he can get his answers from you. And if you're not able to do that, then you should employ the services of the right person to do the thing. And if you don't do that, then you will be facing a problem. We need to make our children realize that freedom is not to make the free. I mean, it's something which is acceptable in society. Does society give you the freedom to harm someone? Does the society give you the freedom to malign someone, or to dishonor someone, or to do
disrespect someone? Disrespect. Definitely
no.
Not.
So no one accepts freedom for the sake of making the wrong choices. And if you freely make a wrong choice, then you will face the punishment. So the same is the case with Islam as a religion. You have to pray of your own free will. You have to pray and fast of your own free will. So the free will has to be there because we say intention, no actions can be rewarded without the pure intentions. And
yeah.
Pure intentions don't come without freedom.
Yeah, indeed. I agree with each and every word of yours. And dear listeners, dear all those teens and students listening to us, I would again end the discussion by saying that be very, very grateful to your parents, because throughout our discussion, you get to know how hard it is for parents to actually upbring a child. It's a tough journey. They have to make efforts and at each and every level to upbring you properly. So be grateful to them and your parents. Make all your efforts to make a better and proper upbringing. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any message for us, any questions, any feedback, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also listen to this program again by logging into our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. There's a tab, COI, Call of Islam, wherein you can find our old programs. Well, you can also find us on these social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam. Thank you so much for listening. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
British media have reported that 3 out of 7 tenants in England have seen their rent increases in the past few weeks or months. Also, the increasing trend of interbank interest rates in England, which is directly related to mortgage payments of millions of British households, means that the country is now facing a serious housing crisis. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website moneyweek.com has covered the story and tells us more. A leading British property company has reported the average monthly rent across Britain, excluding London, has hit a new record of £1,172 per month, as people are struggling to cope with the surging inflation and worsening cost of living crisis. Rightmove, a UK-based real estate company, said on its website on Friday, 27th of January, that tenants in London are being asked to fork out over twice that amount, with a typical private rent hitting as high as £2,480, a 5.8% increase from the previous quarter. James Reddington, sales and letting director at Douglas & Gordon, was at pains to say that. "We've seen the highest rent increases we've seen for decades, and we don't expect this to slow down in the short term." The website also warned of the rising gap between demand and supply, noting that more homes are getting available for rent as tenants cannot afford the renting costs. Rightmove said the number of available homes to rent in December of 2022 had increased by 13% compared with a year earlier, predicting that the average number of people asking for rents across Britain will rise by 5% in 2023, unless there is a significant addition of available homes to rent. The average asking rent had already experienced a 7% rise in December of 2022. Rightmove's Director of Property Science, Tim Bannister, said, "Although the fierce competition among tenants to find a home is starting to ease, it is still double the level it was back in 2019. Tim Bannister added, "Letting agents are seeing extremely high volumes of tenant inquiries and dealing with tens of potential tenants for each available property. The simmering renting costs are not the only implication of the deteriorating economic situation across the United Kingdom. Energy and food prices, along with vital living costs, have experienced a sharp increase in recent months," as the United Kingdom is grappling with its decades-high inflation. Due to the worsening cost-of-living crisis and low wages, the labour forces in different industries have staged strikes across the country, paralysing the country's vital infrastructure such as rail services and the healthcare system. British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. Wales and southwest of England have seen the biggest jumps in new properties to rent, which used asking rents of properties listed on Rightmove to make the findings. Rightmove's Director of Property Science, Tim Bannister, said landlords will need to balance any rent rises with what tenants can afford to pay in their local area to continue to find tenants quickly and avoid any periods where their home is empty due to tenants not being able to meet the asking rent. He said, there appears to be some more property choice for renters compared to the record low levels of last year, which would slightly ease the fierce competition to secure a home. Tim Bannister added, this is why we're forecasting that the pace of annual growth will ease to around 5% by the end of the year nationally, although this would still significantly exceed the average of 2% that we saw during the 5 years before the pandemic. Simon Lee, director at Hackney & Lee Estate Agents and Letting Agents, said the rental market remains buoyant and the majority of our landlords are still receiving multiple applications on their properties. Simon Lee added, rents have remained stable due in part to the cautious approach from landlords when considering rent increases at renewal stage, preferring to retain good tenants rather than have even a small void period or incur the associated costs. According to a think tank, more than 2 in 5 or 44% working-age households reported being either behind on or struggling with housing-related costs in November. According to the Resolution Foundation's figures, the proportion of those who have fallen behind or are struggling has jumped from 26% during the depths of the coronavirus pandemic in January of 2021. The latest survey found that while 6% of working-age households had fallen behind on their housing costs in November last year, a further 38% had met their costs but had struggled. The foundation suggested that while the COVID-19 crisis worsened housing stress, the current cost of living crisis has delivered a more extensive shock to British households. Researchers found 8% of private renters reported falling behind on housing costs in the 3 months leading up to November of 2022. Nearly a fifth, or 19%, of social renters reported falling behind with their housing costs, as did 4% of mortgage holders. Some of those surveyed owed their home outright. Many mortgage holders have not felt the immediate impacts of interest rates rising due to being on a fixed-rate mortgage deal, but they could see their costs increase when their current deal comes to an end. The British newspaper The Daily Mirror has also covered the same story and tells us more. A former Bank of England bigwig warned of more pain to come for millions of British households from rising mortgage costs. Andy Haldane, who was the Bank of England's chief economist until 2021, predicted real wages would fall again this year because of the impact of punishingly high inflation. The Bank of England is forecast to hike its main interest rate from 3.5% to 4% next week to try to cool inflation. That will hit millions of borrowers with variable rate mortgages and those looking for new home loans. But Andy Haldane Now, chief executive of the Royal Society of Arts said, "It is painful and I fear there is more pain to come as those mortgage rate rises for the last year begin to hit people's bank accounts over this year." High Street Bank TSB recently announced it was setting aside £55 million for loans that might turn sour because of the worsening economy and the cost of living crisis. But the lender said it had yet to see a marked increase in customers experiencing financial difficulties or missing payments. Boss Robin Bullock said the resilience of customers is quite remarkable. Andy Haldane, interviewed on BBC Radio 4's Today programme, said, "The terrible double whammy of first COVID and then the cost of living crisis has and is causing huge amounts of financial stress for many businesses, for many households and, of course, for many charities." He added, "We've had a lost decade and a half in terms of pay rises in inflation-adjusted terms. Last year, we saw real pay fall, and we are most likely to see that same happen again this year, and that is putting acute financial stress and indeed mental stress on great many British households."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.